The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's often said that the first casualty of war is the truth. With tensions running high over a potential Russian invasion of Ukraine, all sides have accused each other of spreading misinformation and propaganda. The State Department says Russia is behind a huge disinformation campaign, but Washington has faced criticism as well. The U.S. says Moscow could invade at any moment. Joe Biden repeated the warning despite Ukraine's president saying such information is sowing unnecessary fear.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon. It's good to be back with you again. Thanks for joining me. Boy, there's a lot to get into today, and I hope you'll be able to hang out with me. I want to give you an update on all that's unfolding around us, tell you about some new pieces of legislation that are passing that you need to be aware of. We'll actually go to the ground in the Ukraine today, and you'll hear an amazing firsthand account from a young man who is driving refugees to safety. Plus, we'll take a look at a controversy that has arisen again. Has Russia truly been consecrated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary? It's a big question a lot of people have. I'm on the side that it has, but we'll talk about it coming up. A lot of people say there's evidence that that's not the case, so we'll dive into that and ultimately what we can do. That's just some of what's happening. Of course, we'll pray the chaplet in about an hour, but let's start today, all right? Let's kick it off with the situation in the Ukraine. And I hope you're praying for it. I have been. It has not improved at all. In fact, there are reports that Russia bombed another Ukrainian hospital, and not just any hospital, but a majority, they're bombing a majority of civilians now, too. The hospitals that they're hitting, I mean, it seems to be a total disregard for human life. One of them, I heard a report, was a maternity hospital. Can you imagine that? You know, civilians are being targeted regularly, and it's all part of the strategy. And one of the biggest developments, Poland actually offered the U.S. all 23 of their fighter planes. They have these MiG-29s. Ukrainian fighters know how to fly those. And they were going to give them to the U.S., fly them, you know, get them to Germany, and then from Germany bring them into the Ukraine. And, of course, the U.S. was going to backfill them with F-16s. The U.S. said no. U.S. said if we did that, if we made them available to the Ukrainian Air Force, it could be a problem. And Poland, of course, never consulted the U.S. on doing that. So they just made this offer without any, I guess, initial communication. So the Pentagon has turned down the offer because, the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, has warned that enforcement of a no-fly zone over Ukraine, and I'm going to use his words, okay? I want you to hear what he says, would have a, quote, colossal and catastrophic consequence, not only for Europe, but for the entire world. And, of course, the Russian Defense Ministry warned that neighboring countries allowing, Ukrainian warplanes to use their air bases, they would also be considered participants in the war. Now, again, I'm not quite sure how they draw these distinctions. The U.S. is supplying Ukrainian soldiers with Stingers, right, and javelins and all sorts of weaponry. Now, we're not their boots on the ground. But what this difference does it make if you give a Ukrainian fighter a Stinger or an airplane? But apparently we're not going to do that. So the Pentagon's, despite the Pentagon statement, I should say, there are some senators who are willing to try to figure out a way to help the Ukrainians out. So we'll see what ultimately unfolds here. Vladimir Putin, they're saying psychologically he's under a lot of stress. He thought this was going to be a quick hit. Hit his drug out. And I think it'll continue for quite a while, but they are just turning the country of Ukraine into rubble. Tank after tank after tank is now rolling in. And Russia has very effectively made it difficult for anyone who stayed behind. They have cut electricity to now the disabled nuclear power plant at Chernobyl. And even though it's disabled, just so you're aware of this, there's still stuff going on there. But by cutting off the power, Russia risks another leak if the water used to cool that reactor isn't circulating. So this could be a global problem, be a global catastrophe. So continue to pray that all this gets remedied, it gets mitigated. I can't believe that in March of the year 2022, we're dealing with these types of problems. This is, it's reminiscent of what would happen in the 1940s. Fox News was reporting that Russia targeted American companies that produce liquefied natural gas 2 weeks before they invaded Ukraine. And in the meantime, more American companies are now pulling out of Russia, including American Express. We talked about Coca-Cola. Pepsi's done that. McDonald's, I heard, has done that too with all their stores, but they're going to continue to pay. I think they've got 60,000 or 62,000 employees, which I think is pretty good. But you got to wonder, why we're not doing this to China, right? What Vladimir Putin is doing is criminal. It really is. And I want to call it for what it is. It is absolutely criminal. Not a doubt in my mind about that. But when it comes to human rights records of China, that too is criminal. That is completely horrific when we talk about a genocide going on. But again, you're talking about a billion people in that country and a lot of money into these corporations. I'll tell you what, let me take a break here. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Michael Paul. He's an adjunct professor of history at Christendom College. He's an expert in Russia. We'll talk to him about that. And I want to talk to you a little bit about propaganda as well. How do we discern what's going on? And ultimately, you know, where do we go? So I'll be back. Stay with me. You're more than welcome to join me too anytime you want. Call in now, 888-914-9149. Hey, today we'd like to thank Carlos, who's listening in Texas, for donating his Nissan. And you can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car.
All the issues, one place. One place. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for being here with me today. Taking a look at the latest with Russia and Ukraine. Calling you again to prayer for that situation, and it's constantly evolving, ever developing. I was sharing with you how Russia's cut off electricity to the disabled nuclear power plant you're familiar with called Chernobyl, and how Russia is now targeting American companies. We're waiting for some cyber warfare, and we're hearing a lot of different things. Media in Russia has been clamped down on. Journalists are threatened with 15 years in prison if they misreport. Moscow wants them to report, or the way they present it. They're not calling it a war. They're calling this a special operation, yet tanks are turning the country of Ukraine into rubble. I just received during the break correspondence from Congressman Fortenberry's office. My producer received this and just sent it over to me. I just want to share it with you because it's nefarious. It's evil. It's dark. There was an exclusive Zoom call with four members of Ukraine's parliament this morning, and Congressman Fortenberry was able to confirm what I'm about to share with you. And I'm just passing it along because I've not heard this reported anywhere else. Congressman Fortenberry's office is saying that Russia is using what they call butterfly bombs as part of their hostilities against Ukraine. And again, this comes from a Ukrainian parliamentarian and confirmed the use of these internationally banned bombs. These are banned. But again, we're seeing war crimes happen in Ukraine right now. So Congressman Fortenberry, you know, asked about this, where are they being dropped? And according to the sources, they're dropping these butterfly bombs into humanitarian corridors that are designed to maim people. And here's what's so dark about it, particularly children. They go and they pick them up because they look like toys. What ends up happening was that, you know, they're small little anti-personnel bombs, right? And they have these two folding wings, and they'll flutter, and the arm will then fuse the bomb as it falls. And due to their unusual shape, kids also perceive the mine, and it's really what it is, as a toy. And these kids are being maimed and ultimately killed. Again, this comes, the report is true by the armed forces of Ukraine, and it's just another example of the war crimes that Russia is committing. A lot of civilians are being killed right now, and there's a lot of suffering going on in that country. But my question, too, Dr. Michael Paul is going to be with me. I want his take on this. I want truth. I always want to be on the side of truth. You know, I hear stories. Is it confirmed? Is it validated? How do we know that that's the case? I know Russia is filling their people with propaganda. You know, journalists can't report. There are thousands, 10,000 people have been arrested. They have shut down social media. I mean, we know what's happening over in Russia. That's expected. But is there propaganda coming from the Ukrainian side? I want to share this with you, and then we'll get Dr. Paul's take on this. Last week, Ukraine's ambassador to the United Nations shared a very heartbreaking text message. When I heard it, I thought, how horrible. It's between a Russian soldier and his mother. I don't know if you've heard this before, but if you haven't, I want to play the audio for you. If it's true, it's tragic. This was obtained supposedly again from the soldier's smartphone after he died in combat, and all evidence points to the reality that this is authentic. But listen to this exchange.
Alyosha, how are you doing? Why has it been so long since you responded? Are you really in training exercises? Asks the mother of the killed soldier. Moments before he was killed. Mom, I'm no longer in Crimea. I'm not in training sessions. Where are you then? Papa is asking whether I can send you a parcel. What kind of a parcel, Mama, can you send me? What are you talking about? What happened? Mama, I'm in Ukraine. There is a real war raging here. I'm afraid. We are bombing all of the cities together, even targeting civilians. We were told that they would welcome us. And they are falling under our armored vehicles, throwing themselves under the wheels and not allowing us to pass. They call us fascists. Mama, this is so hard. And this was several moments before he was killed.
Again, that came from his phone, read there at the UN. Horrific, if indeed it's true. My reaction was, oh, wow, it's terrible. But then I thought, I mean, is that true? I mean, my gosh, it couldn't have been scripted any better. Here's this guy really describing what's happening and being, you know, killed moments later in his correspondence with his mother. How do you discern the propaganda? How do we know what's true and what is not true? And what are we seeing on the ground there right now for another look at what's unfolding in Russia and Ukraine, I should say, what's happening in Ukraine with Russia is Dr. Michael Paul, an adjunct professor of history at Christendom College, and he's also an expert on Russia. He joins us today for some perspective. Doctor, thank you for taking time to join us. Good afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
You heard that exchange there with that soldier. We hear about butterfly bombs. We see the evidence of what looks like war crimes being perpetrated by Russian troops under the command of Vladimir Putin. How do we discern the fact from the fiction? And what do you make of audio, like the audio you just heard, and some of these reports that are coming out?
Well, it is difficult because the Ukrainians and the Russians are both, they learned their propaganda from the Soviets. So they're both very good at it. The Ukrainians are doing a better job now because the Russians have been denying that they were in northern and eastern Ukraine. They claim they were in the Donbass, protecting the people of the Donbass, but they're not admitting to a wider war.
Right.
But you can look at the source. Is it a reliable source? Mm-hmm. And then also just sort of a preponderance of evidence. The exchange that you just read was from the Ukrainian ambassador of the United Nations, and he read that to the General Assembly. But
right.
We have a number of pieces of footage of captured Russian soldiers that are saying the same thing, that they thought they were going on exercise, and then they come into Ukraine, and they thought they'd be welcomed, and they're not. The people are calling them fascists and occupiers and telling them to go back home. And then the Ukrainians are also having them call their mothers. To inform the people back in Russia what's going on. That's somewhat problematic because it may be mistreating POWs. You're not supposed to parade them or humiliate them. So
right.
That may be problematic for the Ukrainians to be doing that. But in terms of the butterfly bombs, that's the first time I'd heard they were using them in Ukraine. They used them back during the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and during that war in the 80s. They have been using thermobaric bombs that are rather barbaric. They suck the air out of your lungs and basically light the air on fire around the explosion. And then they've just been cluster bombs, and they've been really relentlessly pummeling a number of these cities. We have footage of hospitals and children's hospitals, nurseries, kindergartens, and other places that schools that are supposed to be protected or off limits that have been hit. And it's pretty clear that these aren't just stray missiles that hit the target, that they're actually aiming for them.
Doctor, explain that to me, though. I mean, I don't get it. Russia, you know, can outgun this military. These are a lot of volunteers picking up weapons to try to protect their country. I mean, clearly, if they abided by the laws of war, they'd still probably have the same outcome. Why use thermobaric weapons? Why use butterfly bombs? Why target maternity wards? And why shoot civilians? I don't understand the purpose of it. These are war crimes. I don't understand the end goal. There's going to be consequence for it.
Partly it could just be to terrify the people that haven't been killed or maimed to get them to surrender. Also, Russia is one of the most corrupt countries in the world now, that they've just spent about a decade or so modernizing their army. They call it the New Look Army.
Right.
And perhaps a lot of that funding actually went to corruption so that Putin could have a billion-dollar mansion or a yacht or things like that. So the army probably hasn't modernized as much as they thought. They're sending in conscripts. The investigative committee, which is sort of the Russian version of the FBI, decided they're going to launch an investigation as to why there's conscripts going into Ukraine, because I guess there's a law where they're not supposed to be used outside Russia. This is probably a way for Putin to save face and claim that his defense minister or his generals have done something illegal and that he can throw them under the bus. They just haven't done as well as they thought. I think they thought they probably were going to be welcomed and as liberators. And then it seems like they only planned it for a few months. They didn't take a long time planning this invasion.
You know, Vladimir Putin will not retreat. So all experts are saying he's going to double down. Of course, there's concerns that it may escalate. Is he ready to risk World War III if other countries assist Ukraine? For example, I was sharing before you came on how the Poles were willing to give their MiGs, send them to Germany, and then ultimately get them into the Ukraine. But the U.S. says, no, we're not going to do that. They don't want to risk engaging Russia in that type of war. Two things. I mean, is he ready to risk World War III? And can you draw the distinction for me? Because, you know, look, the U.S. is giving stingers, and they're giving javelins, and they're giving all sorts of support and aid, and so are other NATO nations to the Ukraine in their battle against Vladimir Putin. What's the difference between giving somebody these weapons and then giving them a jet? It's a weapon a little bit larger and more effective, but why is that such a deal breaker?
The Russians have a policy of escalate to de-escalate. So if they feel they're losing, they may start threatening to use theater nuclear weapons. And over the last 30 years, they were rebuilding their military, but they didn't have a very good conventional force. So they were heavily reliant on theater nukes. Western Europe, in Eastern Europe, if they thought that NATO was going to threaten them. So they're more likely to use theater nukes than the Western countries are. And then the problem is that if we fly the jets from Manstein Air Base, where they were going to fly them from Poland to an American base in Germany. And then when we fly them to Ukraine, then it looks like we're sending planes in. I understand it seems like it's hair splitting, but The Pentagon has sort of decided that that looks too much like we're getting involved.
Yeah.
Whereas if we ship them Javelin missiles and other munitions, that's a little bit different.
No, I get the nuance. I do see the perspective. Let's take a few phone calls. If you want to join us, I only have my guest today, Dr. Michael Paul, for a few minutes, but we'd love to have you join the conversation. Let's start in Chicago. Nancy's got a question for you or a comment. Nancy, good afternoon.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment that I had in some of the Spanish-speaking sites that I follow, there was a video of, and at this point you have to say supposed for everything, but Ukrainians setting fire on some buildings and then filming it and saying it was the Russians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even, Drew, when you say, you know, I like to get things confirmed and validated, mm-hmm. I mean, confirmed and validated by who? Who is mm-hmm. confirming? Who? What does that even mean? And so it is just, it seems like hating Russia has become the new, you know, love BLM, that if you even say, question anything that, you know, the Ukrainians might not be doing right, my goodness, you're a communist. And, you know, that's, you know, someone who doesn't yeah. welcome questioning, you know, should be, you should be aware of that. So just wanted commentary from your guest about that.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Nancy. It's actually a good point. So Ukrainians are saw on a different media outlet outside of what we're seeing here normally, setting fire to buildings. My first thought was, well, maybe it's Russians in you know, Ukrainian uniforms or as lay citizens doing that, and then, you know, blaming the Ukrainians for saying, hey, this is propaganda, you know. But then again, it could be true. It could be the Ukrainians doing this and using it as propaganda to get the world to be outraged and want to intervene. Again, Doctor, it goes back to the initial conversation we had. How do you discern those things? How do you validate what's true?
Yeah, that one's really hard because I think that the Ukrainians are probably doing some of that and blaming the Russians. Yep. I don't think they're doing the whole scale shelling of their own cities the way the Russians make it sound like almost everything is Ukrainian propaganda. But they also may be burning down buildings to deny that, you know, if the Russians come into that area, that they can't use it as a, right. a defensive location or something like that. But I don't know. I haven't heard of the particular Spanish right. example that she mentioned. But, yeah, it is problematic because, as I said, they're both learned their propaganda from the Soviets. And good propaganda often has a kernel of truth to it. But then at some point you lie a bit to get your point across. And a lot of the information we're getting, it sounds like almost the Ukrainians aren't doing anything wrong and the Russians aren't doing anything right. And probably both sides are having problems.
Yeah. All right, we'll go to Helen next. She's listening in Massachusetts. Hi, Helen. Good afternoon.
Hi. I just wondered if it's true that the Russians thought they were going to be welcomed, why would they have all those weapons? I mean, I can see the soldier would have to have, you know, his own weapon or her own weapon, but why would they have all those bombs if they thought they were really going to be welcomed? Just curious.
Okay.
Probably the first couple of days they did what some analysts have called thunder runs, where they basically just ran a column of tanks and light or armored equipment and light infantry to try and capture Kiev and some other cities. And it seems that they thought they could win in a couple of days, two or three days.
Yeah.
And when that didn't happen, they had the rest of the force built up, and then they brought that in. But I think their initial thought was that they could maybe topple the government in 3 or 4 days or set up their own government. Mm-hmm. And either demoralize or confuse the Ukrainians enough to take over at least the eastern part of the country, and then they wouldn't need to do the rest. But then the Russians tend to be really artillery and armor heavy, mm-hmm. So they always sort of have that as a backup, and that's pretty much what they're going to do now is they're going to bring in the artillery and armor and pound these cities into submission probably.
My guest today is Dr. Michael Paul. If you want to join us, I only have a moment left. Let me sneak Ed in here. He's listening in Vallejo, California. Ed, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Drew. Thank you, Doctor. I was just curious as to how, has anybody got information on the Russian, actual Russian people? I'm sure all the Russian people aren't for this thing. Is there any information coming out about that? That's my question.
All right, good question. Thank you very much. And, you know, we do know that, you know, the media there, Doctor, has their own messaging to the people, although there are thousands. I heard one report, 10,000 protesters have been arrested already over this. I'm sure there's other media outlets that are getting information in. But where are the Russian people on this? How do they feel about it? What do they understand?
The figure I heard was a little bit lower than 10,000, if that might be correct. But you had about 178 priests and abbots and monks of the Russian Orthodox Church that signed a open letter against it, which that seems like a small number, but that's a big deal because the Russian Orthodox Church tends to be rather supportive of the government. And then there were 1,200 students and faculty and alumni of what they call MIGIMO, the Moscow Institute of International Relations. It's actually run by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but it's their big foreign policy school, and they came out against the war.
Right.
And there have been other instances of actors and actresses and public officials and public persons have come out against the war. So there is opposition to it. Some of that tends to be based on how educated or how Western Russians are. If you meet mm-hmm. English-speaking Russians, they'll come out against it more than Russians that don't know English or don't or haven't been to the West that much.
Right.
But I think most Russians have been told that the Ukrainians are their brothers, and we're all, I mean, Putin claims that they're all one nation, that there shouldn't be a Ukraine as a separate state.
Exactly.
But basically, they bought into this, and I think there is some truth to that, that they are culturally very similar and they're neighbors. But so the idea of why are we going to war with these people and why are we bombing their cities,
right.
I think is really problematic. After they've been fed this propaganda for so long.
There's a disconnect there. I've got to leave it here, Doctor, but just one final thought for you. How far is Vladimir Putin willing to go? Do you think that we would see nuclear weapons used at all against other nations, not just Ukraine? But if he thought he was losing, how far would he go?
The fear right now is he'll use them against Ukraine. If it goes further, if he manages to finally take Ukraine, he may threaten the Baltic states, which that then becomes a problem for NATO because they're a member of the NATO alliance. But it's hard to say. His statement about having a special status for the nuclear weapons that he mentioned last week, my understanding is that there hasn't been any observation of actually real change in the nuclear status. That was just sort of rhetoric to rattle his saber, and that's all it is. But
yeah,
it's hard to say how far he'll go. Hopefully he'll find a way out of Ukraine. And then it doesn't escalate any further, but it's really hard to say.
Doctor, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. The story continues to be written, and maybe we'll talk again. I hope so. I appreciate your expertise and your insights. That's Dr. Michael Paul, adjunct professor of history at Christendom College and expert on Russia. So much more to talk about, but so little time. I want to just change gears when I come back and bring you up to speed something that's happening here at home. There is a bill that just passed the Florida legislature. You have to hear about this. I'll fill you in when I return.
Need some hope as a reminder that everything will be okay? Stay with us. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm handing holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
That's right. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we will pray the chaplet. I hope you'll join me. Call one other person. Tell them about this powerful time of prayer where, prayers are being answered. Miracles are happening. Where the faithful are uniting in one spirit and imploring the mercy of God. It's a powerful moment. It's about to happen in 20 minutes. So if you really need to have some extra prayer power to push that intractable problem out of your way, be sure and join me coming up, all right? I want to fill you in on something that's happening here at home. There's been a lot of international talk. You know, and there's been a lot of talk about the culture, right? The pushback against the prevailing culture now is starting to take legislative effect, at least at the state level. Yesterday, Florida Senate, and I don't know if you followed this or heard this or even if it was reported anywhere, they voted in favor of a bill that came from the House. It was called the Parental Rights in Education Bill. And I saw this in the National Review. The way they define it, they say that the bill is going to require schools to notify parents if they become aware of changes in the student's mental or emotional or psychological health. And that is, and I'm going to quote them here, unless a reasonably prudent person would believe that such disclosure would result in abuse, abandonment, or neglect, end of quote. The bill would also make it easier for parents to bring actions against the school district should their rights under the transparency mandate be ignored. So that's what this is all about. Now, critics of the bill, those critics include none other than President Joe Biden, right? They've redubbed this. You know how they all these beautiful names like Reproductive Justice or the Equality Act. I mean, the things that they have, they give these beautiful names to. Well, they renamed this particular bill the Don't Say Gay Bill. And that's because the most controversial part of the bill states this. And I just want to share what it states. It says, quote, classroom instruction by school personnel or third parties on sexual orientation or gender identity may not occur in kindergarten through grade 3 or in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students in accordance with state standards. So presidential spokeswoman Jen Psaki today, you know what she called that? Horrific. It's horrific. How does, and I just want to just think about this for a moment, how does making sure that school personnel or third parties on sexual orientation or gender identity, how does making sure that your kids in kindergarten through grade 3 are not exposed to that? How's that horrific? I think that's heroic. I think she got her words wrong. You know what the president called it? He used another H word. Not horrific. He called it hateful. Right? I call it heroic. Horrific, hateful. That's what one side of the aisle says. He said in a tweet that every member of the LGBTQ plus community, especially the kids, should rest assured that his administration, you know, will you know, support and do what they can to remedy this. Let me share with you what the governor said. Governor DeSantis responded. There's a video this morning, and I just thought that this is well worth you listening to, well worth sharing with you. Check this out. Listen.
Sexual rights and education, what critics call the Don't Say Gay Bill, is on the Senate floor.
Does it say that in the bill? Does it say that in the bill?
I'm asking you
to tell me what's in the bill, because you are pushing false narratives. It doesn't matter what critics say.
It says it bans classroom instruction on sexual identity and gender orientation.
For who?
For
grades pre-K through 3. So 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, and the idea that you wouldn't be honest about that and tell people what it actually says, it's why people don't trust people like you, because you peddle false narratives. And so we disabuse you of those narratives. And we're going to make sure that parents are able to send their kid to kindergarten without having some of this stuff injected into their school curriculum.
Amen, 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 amen. God bless you, Governor DeSantis. You know, he called the guy out. Where does it say, you know, don't say gay in that bill, huh? And who's it for? Kindergarten through third grade. You're talking, you know, 4- and 5-year-olds, you know, up through third grade. Shame on that reporter. Shame on Jen Psaki. Shame on Joe Biden. Shame on those who want to indoctrinate kids with this confusion. Shame on them. This is why we have the problems we have right now. Governor DeSantis promised he is going to sign that bill when it comes across. And the bill is meant to provide parents with the transparency that they need. All right? So that when you send your kid to a public school, you're going to know that you're the primary educator and that somebody else who you don't know is not going to be indoctrinating them with this disoriented ideology. That's really what it is. And look, I've invited Walt Heyer back. He's been a longtime friend of the show. He knows this kind of stuff inside and out. He's been the victim of it, really, if you think about it. Through the influence of his grandmother, when he grew up, you know, his grandmother would put him in dresses. And he grew up thinking he wanted to be a girl, and he went through a transition. You know, he found Found out several years later. I think he was a woman for about 8 years, or at least, you know, he thought he was. But he still had to grapple with the pain. You know, the pain of really what was going on internally with him. He was also abused. And you know, having his gender changed, if you will, going through the procedures, it only covered the wound. So he actually transitioned back to his male identity, what he was born with. And he has now made it his ministry to help others who might be confused. He mentors others who want to transition back. And if you are in that situation right now, if you're dealing with gender identity problems, please check out this website. It's sexchangeregret.com, or you can go to his website, walthyer.com. Okay, Walt Heyer, Heyer spelled H-E-Y-E-R, or just go to sexchangeregret.com. Walt's a wonderful man. I've had dinner with him. I spent time with him. I've listened to him talk. He's been on the show with me. He will help you. He knows what it's like. He's walked up the path and back down that path, and it's good to have him with us today. Walt, good afternoon.
Yeah, nice to be on, Drew. Good to talk to you.
This bill, I want your reaction on it. The bill that targets kindergarten children through grade 3. It probably resonates in a special way with you, because I know when you were very young, you know, your grandmother, you contributed, I would think, to some of the disorientation you had. I hope I'm not speaking out of school, but I'd love your perspective, and maybe you can even briefly just share your story with those who don't know it.
Yeah. Well, you know, what DeSantis is doing is the right thing. Kids in kindergarten and at young ages, like I was, who was indoctrinated, really, persuaded. I mean, kids are so malleable. They're so easy to influence, especially adults, teaching them these things. So I think what DeSantis is doing here is absolutely what every single school in every state should be doing. What's happened is, unfortunately, Drew, is our schools have become indoctrination centers for child abuse. And so what we have when we teach kids about, you know, what they're literally telling the kids, they can change genders, even allowing, many schools are allowing the children to change genders without even telling the parents. Yep. They're allowing them to experiment. They're allowing them to do all these things. And DeSantis is saying, no, don't do this. And by the way, for the audience to understand something, I've worked not only myself, but with thousands of people who've been through this. And none of us are gay. Never been gay. It's not even about gay. So this is really one of the things that's so disturbing to me when I watched this last night, is some adults were parading down the school hallway shouting, I'm gay, or gay, whatever it was. And the truth is that 90% of all the people that I've worked with that have once identified or still identify as a transgender person, because someone started them out early in life believing this, are not homosexual. This is an issue of what we call adverse childhood experiences. In other words, something happened to them early in life. And believe me, the people promoting this know that they can take a young child and put pornography in front of them, or they can tell them about changing genders, and they know that they can influence their life. This is why I call it child abuse. We have our public school systems are using children to experiment with this, because people like Biden, and then we have this Rachel person who's in Health and Human Services, who's a man who dresses like a woman. And so he's one of the ones that's kind of behind this. This is part of where this is coming from, the Biden administration. Sad to say, much of their funding comes from this left-wing ideology about transgenderism from people like George Soros and others. We all know this. So what DeSantis is doing is trying to protect the children from being sexually, emotionally, and psychologically abused by a curriculum that they should not be seeing. If parents want to do this at home, fine, that's their business. They can ruin their kids if they want. But our public school system should not be indoctrination centers for child abuse. And I would like to hug DeSantis and say, yeah, ye whiz, come on. Every school system in the United States should be doing precisely what DeSantis is doing, and stand up against this nonsense, yeah, and start stop destroying kids. I am working now with younger and younger people. I'm working with children as low as 13 years old who've been indoctrinated in their schools, 14 and 15 years old. And so I'm working very hard with the parents to try to un-indoctrinate them. And this has turned into almost a cult-like thing.
You're
where
right.
the schools are just pushing this. And you know, one of the things that's happening here is beginning to destroy many families because you have a parent splitting one the other way and they don't understand. And Drew, in the history of mankind, including myself, no one has ever changed their gender. You can't biologically change a man into a woman or a woman into a man. So what we're dealing with is a complete fabrication of the truth, because
right.
you and I both know mm-hmm. that when the sperm hits the egg, that is conception. And from that point on, you can't change gender, sex. And so they use these terms, Drew, like birth, your gender assigned at birth. Well, your
right.
gender is not assigned at birth.
Mm-hmm.
It's fixed and innate at conception 9 months before birth. So they use terms. Then they use that term, so if they say it's assigned at birth, then they give you the idea that you can unassign it, that you have the power to change it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true. So factually speaking, I mean, this DeSantis, I'm so glad that you're putting a spotlight on this and talking about it. I don't believe there's anything more important than protecting this generation of children, because they're really trying to destroy them with this LGBT ideology. So I applaud you.
Well, thank you for saying that. I just want to speak the truth. I want to protect our children. I think this is all part of the problem. If we allow this indoctrination to take place, there's a ripple effect that ultimately follows. And societally, not only do we all suffer, but those children suffer in a special way. You know, you bring up something I think that was on point. You talk about how this has been mainstreamed. I mean, since the sexual revolution, there's been a lot more discussion, probably too much discussion now about sexuality, but stuff's on the air all the time. It's on social media. It's now being addressed at school, to kindergarten. Kids in kindergarten. I don't think I even wanted to hold a girl's hand when I was in first grade, let alone learn about this type of stuff, right? So
right.
kids are being exposed to stuff at ages that I think is way too early. But two things here. I mean, how do we get public schools to do it in a way that is proper, that is supportive of actually living a chaste life? That's such an alien message today, and yet it's such a beautiful message, chastity. The bill that's mm-hmm. being put forward right now requires schools to let parents or guardians know when their children are having these identity issues, and that's a real issue, and it should be addressed.
Sure.
Two things. I mean, Joe Biden called it, hateful. The White House press spokesperson, Jen Psaki, called it hateful. DeSantis, what he's doing, I think, is heroic. How do we get schools to make sure that our children are safeguarded and we get this disorientation? I know it's coming from the administration and from Soros and the media, as we just heard. How do we protect our kids? How do we make sure that they're kept safe and they're not led down this very dysfunctional path?
Well, you and I can speak out about it, and then hopefully other governors who look at what DeSantis is doing, and lawmakers in that state will start doing the same thing. We're seeing this, Drew, start to take place, where more and more legislators are going, we're not going to let these young people have hormone blockers. We're not going to let them go through these things they call a transition, which is not a transition. But they're trying to protect the children. We should be spending every ounce of energy and strength we have to protect our children. And the fact of the matter is that the federal government and the public school systems and the teachers' unions, mm-hmm. in my opinion, are trying to do everything they can to destroy the kids. They're not helping them. I'm sorry. This is institutionalized
right.
child abuse by our public school systems. I am
really
sick
is.
And tired of it. I've been speaking out about this now for 7 years.
Or I've met your beautiful wife. I think you brought up a great point, too. A lot of people think, if somebody is transgender, they're gay. That's
right.
not the
they're
case.
Not.
I mean, I take a look at Bruce Jenner. Look at the kids that he's fathered, And now Bruce Jenner has made that particular transition. He wants to go by Caitlyn now. And I think it's an important point. For those who are dealing with gender identity, maybe you can speak to that. I mean, I think there's a lot of confusion about what it means to be transgender and what a person goes through.
Right. Well, what happens is there's a thing called adverse childhood experience. They call them ACEs. Children, when they're raised like I was, who suffer some traumatic event in their life, will turn to these alternate identities because of the abuse. And so for me, I was sexually, emotionally, and psychologically abused. I would say about 70% of the men that I work with and women that I've worked with, as a matter of fact, have been sexually abused. Many of them emotionally abused, psychologically abused. And quite frankly, what the public schools are doing with this curriculum in many places that DeSantis is trying to stop actually is indoctrination and child abuse. And so why would we allow our school systems to abuse our children this way with these sexual-oriented class studies? So I think you're right on. You keep talking about this, and I'd like to come back sometime and talk about these adverse childhood experiences so that parents can learn and understand how they happen so that they can watch out for this happening in their own family and protect their children.
Well, I'll tell you, Walt, when we're done our conversation in a couple of minutes, stay on the line. Maggie will grab you. We'll get you on next week. I think it's an important issue to follow up on. And I know your ministry is helping so many people. In fact, I want to give it another plug. I want people to check it out. If you are struggling with, you know, any sort of gender issue right now, maybe you've transitioned and you're regretting that, you can check out sexchangeregret.com. You can check out Walt Heyer at his website, walthyer.com, learn his story. Now, you've written a couple books or just one? I know the one book because I actually have it, but people want to read or get your books.
Seven books.
Good. Now, how do you get them?
Now, you can get them through the website. Just go to the bookstore, order the books through the bookstore, and Paper Genders and Trans Life Survivors, two excellent books for people who are just trying to begin to understand that those two books you should have on your shelf.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So the other thing I'm just thinking about as I'm sitting here, God bless Governor DeSantis. I love what he said. I loved how he called the media out. You know, what's in the
Absolutely.
Bill? And, you know, why do you find that so objectionable? He's a great governor, but he's the governor of the state of Florida, for those who don't know. What about other states? Are parents going to be able to push against their school boards in other states across the unions? We got some very liberal states, which we won't see this in, but there's a lot of conservative states out there that want to protect kids and uphold these particular values. What do you see coming next?
Yeah, I think Arkansas, Alabama, Idaho, there's many states that are beginning to take a deep dive into this and understand that the harm that is being done to our children in public schools. So I hope there's a wave across the country. More and more people need to have this spoken about. And so I'm thrilled this has come up. I'm actually glad that Biden said what he said, because then you can see what they're all about. You know, they're all for abusing children, in my view. They don't care what happens to them long term.
Is that the case, or are they just ill-informed? You know, I don't understand how intelligent people who hold high office could have that view. I don't understand. I never could understand. Maybe you don't have the answer either. What do you make of
it's fundraising? They've admit to when they speak out on these things, they raise a lot of money for the Democratic Party. So it's primarily a fundraising tool.
All right, that's well said. Walt, let me leave it at that point. Let's get you back, okay, though? I'd love to hear more of your story, and we'll help some people who may be struggling. Good to have you here, okay?
Thank you, Drew.
My regards to your wife. We'll catch up. That's Walt Heyer. Check him out at walthyer.com. And, of course, check out his books. We'll pray the chaplet when we come back. Let's pray for Walt. Let's pray for anyone who's struggling in this area. Let's pray for our leaders. Let's pray for Jen Psaki, who called this horrific, and Joe Biden, who called it hateful, and for the great disorientation, that spirit of disorientation that seems to be prowling about our great country. We'll pray for God's mercy right after this.